What's good? Welcome back. Mind Bully Podcast with your host, Norris Odiase, back again. So blessed, so thankful to be here with y'all again on another Monday with the Mind Bully Podcast. Like, huh? Thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you haven't listened to the last episode, I talked about, hey, God, hurry up when you're impatient and you're going after something and you're not there yet. And just the day-to-day, the motions of what you're doing now is essential and vital for you to become that something, that next person. So please, if you haven't, go check that out last episode. And one call to action, guys. Please, if you haven't already, leave a review and rate this kind of content because boost on the algorithm. And if you find this valuable, I believe other people also find value in this content and what we're doing here with the Mind Bully Podcast. So please go rate and review. Check-ins. How I'm feeling, how I'm doing. Guys, to be honest, right? No cap. I'm about a 9.5. I say 9.5, 10. And I say this because it's a Wednesday. Shooting this on a Wednesday day. Tomorrow's obviously a Thursday, but there's a special little Thursday the last week of November. It's the day that we give thanks, Thanksgiving, and it's a time that we look forward to, not only for the little turkey, for the little ham, for the little, you know, the dressing, but it's a time that I look forward to because my family, my friends, just that kind of love, that all gathering of those type of people. And for this episode, I actually got two people in the little section. My very best childhood friends, Jordan Kennard, Tevin Orr, they sitting in, they listening. And so I'm just filled up and I'm at peace and I'm happy because, I mean, my people here and my mind is good. So 9.5. Speaking of a check-in, though, I ain't done with the little check-in. Just let me talk, all right? I feel like there's like an individual person saying, all right, bro, your time up. You done talked a little bit. Speaking of check-ins, guys, I didn't give you a little inside secret, right? Just listen. There's two people in the studio. Yeah, I done talked about them. They good. Shut up. But there's one person right in front of me. One person who's the closest person to me on earth. And it's my twin brother, Nick Odiase. Welcome. This is my very first guest. And I thought there is no one else on earth that I wanted to have on here at the Mind Bully Podcast than my twin brother, Nick Odiase. Welcome to the Mind Bully Podcast.
Thank you very much. What's up, guys? I think a lot.
Pause. Sorry. He's my brother, so I can like get on him. Can we have some more energy?
Brother.
There we go.
Okay. Hey, guys. What's up? How's everybody doing? My name is Nick. I am currently a second year medical student. Trying to become eventually a sports medicine doctor. So how y'all doing?
Eventually. A sports medicine doctor. I want to see how you doing though. Like how you said, how y'all doing? How are you doing? What's your check-in?
I think I'm probably going to be at like a 8, and there's a reason why. Because I am actually like, imagine it was like you're almost at the pinnacle of like, you're almost at the pinnacle of like a roller coaster and it's all about to go very fast. A lot of things are about to start happening. Right. That is basically where I'm at. So I don't know if I've told you this, but I'm about to start studying for something called the USMLE, the United States Medical Licensing Exam, Step 1 exam, which is basically, you know, about when you start your preclinical years. Preclinical meaning you're taking classes just like college, but worse.
Right.
And then you take step one, which is just
Pause though. Bro, you're an 8 and you're doing all that? It sounds like you speaking Spanish right now. Are you at an 8?
And that's the thing. Whenever you get into this field, it's just like you start to understand a whole bunch of different stuff. And it's just like, I mean, I'm not there yet.
Right.
So it's like, I'm fine.
So how it goes is you have a step system where you have a check one, you said? Step one.
Three steps.
Step two, step three. What's the duration of those three steps?
What do you mean?
Like, how long does it take to get through? Like, is it a timing thing?
It's a full day thing. Like, okay. The test itself is a full day thing. So, right. Even before that was the, if we want to get into pre-med stuff, there's the medical college admissions test, which is the MCAT. And that's an 8-hour test. You take it. That determines, your competitiveness, quote unquote, on getting into medical school.
Right.
Then you go through the circus that is getting into medical school. And then after that, 2 years of studying, trying to build your resume for a residency, all that stuff.
Right.
And then you take step one. Step one used to be, I will say used to, because there's an update that came actually, but used to be that's how you set up for what residency you're going to be, literally choosing what doctor you're going to be.
Right.
Because everybody that has anything to do with becoming a doctor goes to medical school. So if you want to be a surgeon, a neurosurgeon, all that stuff, all medical school. If you want to be a family medicine doctor, that's medical school too. So everybody is literally together. But that's all, it becomes stratified once you get your step one score.
Okay, wait. So rewind though, because there's something that you said for me that it kind of resonates, because it's like with this whole med school, and you said it's very competitive.
Mm-hmm.
How did that start? Like, where did your mindset, did it start at an early age for you to say, hey, I want to be a doctor. I want to go through this very strenuous process. I know that I'm going to have to jump over hurdles to do this and take steps and do all this Spanish, mm-hmm. what it sounds like to me. But where did that vein of, I know how hard it's going to be, but I'm going to keep pushing. Where did that originate from, and how did you zero in on med school?
I think the thing is, it's kind of like, yeah, it's hard, but it's not going to be that hard. Like, it is in, and it's in everybody's mind, because most things, especially if you're going to college and you're going through training and things like that, are difficult.
Right.
And we tend to, before we're there, we kind of tend to underestimate how difficult it's going to be.
Yeah.
I did not think that it would be this difficult, but at the same time, it is not that difficult to me now because I've adjusted to it.
Right.
But it's just like, whenever you look back and see what you went through, you're like, oh, wow, that was that was something. But I think it's honestly, this is just what I've always wanted to do.
Talk about that a little bit, what you went through. Because me, outside looking in, I see a guy, he's probably a genius in my eyes. Like, he's my twin brother. We grew up, and you know, you have the stigma of the athletic twin and the smart twin. I have a genius twin that's growing up, taking all the hard classes, went on to school, did things, and now he's in med school. But the time where you specifically left tech and were trying to get into med school, talk about that process and how tough it was to get to that level. I think you're really downplaying the hard work in the day to day that you had to consistently grind and put in. And even when things didn't go your way, even when you weren't getting those letters back, even you'd go to the mailbox, did I get a letter? I think you're dumbing down that process to make it seem like, oh, it was, but there's real hard work day to day that you went through. And I just want you to talk about that a little bit.
I think whenever I went into it, so like that year, 2017, I graduated. I was like, this is great. I honestly, that's kind of what I was referring to when I said, when you look back, because looking back, I was like, wow, this was something that I was not expecting to have like a story like this.
Uh-huh.
And it was just, I don't know. Like, that's my answer. Like, I really don't know how I did it. Yeah. I don't really know why I continued.
Yeah.
But I just did.
How many times did you get no's? Like, how many schools for how many years?
I got in my fourth year. So
fourth year removed from college?
No. 3 years removed from college. Okay. My first year applying was my senior year of college.
Yeah.
Because you obviously get in for the next year.
Right.
And yeah. I got no's for 3 years, and then the fourth time, I got it.
And is that normal to get no's? Like,
oh, absolutely. Right. It's extremely normal.
And what do other people do? Like, are they just persistent, or
you either keep trying or you give up? Honestly, right. Yeah, it's just like that's how it works. You every once in a while you'll figure out what you need to do. You know what was the weak point in your application, and then you fix it, and then you make new connections or whatever, and then you eventually get in somewhere.
Yeah. So I think a lot of people can connect with this, because it's like, for even for me with basketball, it's like you see your peers. You went to school, let's say, Matt Mooney, a Jarrett Culver, a Tariq Owens, those type of guys. What are they doing? And you kind of see your peers do one thing, and you probably saw a lot of your students, your friends go on to med school, and somebody listening probably sees their friends in their field go on to do these things at these big companies, and they're kind of in that transition period where they're having to wait for something. Like their ability should make them already get there.
Right.
But specifically them, they are there.
Right.
They're there and they're there. Like,
right.
A lot of people can't fathom why, and they crumble under that comparison. It's hard to differentiate yourself from them.
Mm-hmm.
How hard was that during that process when you knew, like, you had a deeper knowing that, man, I should be at this school. Like I deserve to be here, but it's not happening. How hard was it to kind of break that vein of comparison for you?
It was very difficult, and it still is very difficult. Yeah. And that's the thing. Whenever you see it as, like, when I was applying, I was applying for a long time, as we just said. My first year of medical school, the people, if I had gotten in straight away, they were fourth years. So it was like I got to see the people that graduated in 2017 graduate medical school. Ooh. While I was finishing my first year.
Oh, my goodness.
So I was just like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
This is something.
That's why you said it still is kind of like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing. I see people that graduated in 2018, 2019. They're they're about to graduate while I'm about to take step one, which is like, you know, I haven't even gone through rotations. I haven't worked through the hospital and all that stuff.
Another connection, right? If I'm kind of switch the vein of like the thought process here, it's like, I'm thinking out loud, but where do you think that comes from? Because here you have me, people that are unfamiliar with my story. I had two broken feet. I had two coaches tell me that I should never play at the D1 level, played there, had two broken feet, went on to be a national championship runner up, whatever. But like that perseverance and your perseverance, we resonate and we connect in that way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of thinking, and I'm just like, it's like pride. It's like a deeper knowing of your ability, who you are, what you're going to do. And honestly, if I'm thinking about it, downstairs is our parents' room. And I think it comes from our father.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What traits do you think really, other than the pride that you tie to Pops?
I think it is just the grind mentality.
Yeah.
And I think about it honestly on a regular basis, because whenever I'm studying, like whenever I will post up in the library, or we call it the HEC. It's just like a place with a bunch of classes.
Yeah.
And you just grind. You get snacks, you get food, and you work.
Yeah.
And you just keep working.
Right.
And I don't know. In the back of my head, I'm like, I like this.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just like, I know that I'm improving. This is the time where I'm growing and I'm improving. And I know that this is the reason why I'm going to be better.
Right.
I'm going to be at a better place than I was before.
Right.
I don't know. It's just like, you just kind of love it.
Yeah.
You just kind of like the process of it.
Yeah.
And that's just, I don't really know how else to put it. It's just like, you're working towards something. That is the important part. That's the part that makes you feel like good. That makes you feel alive. There's something that you're working towards.
Right. Hey, and, hold on. There's two people laughing in the studio, but that's the thing about us, that we're connected and like, we're proud. It's because of our father. It's like, I see them laughing in the corner of my eyes, but I'm like, I don't care. Like, yeah. I could, no, I know it's like a deeper knowing that we know what we're talking about, like the pride and like that kind of working towards something, that unapologetically doing and forcing yourself to do this one thing because you know that you will get to the next step because of it. That is very interesting. And it's like, I think, right, being prideful and being like grinding, it's great. But there's some people that's like, bro, it don't have to be that tough in life. Like, why don't you just do what you love? Why do you grind? Like, what would you say to people that it's not like they don't want to grind, but it's just like, bro, the road less traveled is so comfortable. Why wouldn't I just do that? What do you think about that?
It comes to a point where you would not enjoy your life. I mean, that's just how it is, because if you want something, if you want to attain it, you have to work for it. It's just like there's a price that you have to pay. Mm-hmm. And if you're not willing to pay that price, you won't have it. And that's fine if that's not what you want.
Yeah.
But if it's like you want something, but you can't pay for it.
Yeah.
So you're just going to complain.
Yeah.
Like, it's just you have to work.
Right.
You have to pay for it.
And obviously I connect with that so much, but I think now thinking about it, it has everything to do with our upbringing, like I said. And it's like, not only just because of our dad, it's just like Nigerian culture. Mm-hmm. It's like, what they say, sofa head. Sofa head means sofa head Olympics, like sofa head, like glorifying suffering.
Yeah.
Like, I grind, I do this, I'm from the slums. Y'all didn't have this back there. I was sleeping with sheets. We ate the booty bread with barely any peanut butter. Like, glorifying that is because that's how you made some. I feel like in African culture and a lot of people's culture, they glorify like grind, tough, when sometimes you don't always have to have that. I remember when we were younger, bro, we couldn't even watch TV. Like a regular Saturday, it's Saturday. We just had a long week of school, tough, whatever. Regular Saturday, we'd put on the TV, let's say noon. He said, are you mad? Go on, read your book. Don't you have? I said, bro, huh? Like, my friends are watching TV. Like, why do you think that is still the way it is in African culture, one? And two, do you think you've benefited positively from that culture?
I think specifically dealing with foreigners in general. Right. That's what I think. I think you can extrapolate this to more than just Nigerians or more just Africans, because they come to this country knowing what it can offer.
Yeah.
As opposed to what it can offer in their home country.
Right.
There are so many opportunities. And that's the thing. In America, don't get me wrong, there are plenty of injustices and there are plenty of people that have privilege that they do not have to work nearly as hard.
Right.
But for the most part, if you work hard enough, you will be able to make a living for yourself and your family.
Right.
That is the main point.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in other countries, honestly, with the corruption that there is, that is not always the case.
So that's why you think we got that self-ahead grind.
Yes. It's like, if I did this in Nigeria, I would not be anywhere near.
Yeah.
But all I had to do is come to America and do the same thing I would be doing.
Right.
And I'm almost guaranteed success.
Right.
I'm almost guaranteed. And not even like wealth and ridiculous amounts of money. It's just, my family is safe and secure.
Right.
Why would I not? Like, that's the issue. That is the point.
What do you think the downfalls of that? We said so many positive. What do you think the downfalls of that is?
Oh, yeah. That's something I'm still dealing with to this day, actually.
Yeah.
There is, like, there needs to be a balance
when
it comes to that.
Right.
Because at the same time, if you work hard until your bones break, then what?
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
Until you collapse and then you're in a hospital, you're not being productive, and you're in pain. So, like, how does that work?
And it's more than that, bro. I asked Dad, like, the other day, I said, Dad, when you're not working, right, like, do you have hobbies? Like, what do you like to do? He's like, I mean, my mind's racing. Like, I think about other ways to mm-hmm. about my work or mm-hmm. the scripture. I'm just like, it's like African parents know their work and God.
Yeah.
It's like, what other things do you guys do? Like, we pray all day and we go to work and we pray all night. Like, huh? Like, where's the balance? And I feel like for us, it's important to, we've already had that mindset, right? So it's easy to just do that. It's important to kind of add like creativity, different things, like a release to kind of spark yourself to be an individual.
Right.
I would say this because it's kind of a weird transition, but thinking about how close and how not close, but how much we are alike, mm-hmm. like our dad, mm-hmm. how was it when he wasn't there? Because for me, if people weren't aware, my dad, from when I was 8 to 18, he wasn't in the States with us because he's a pharmacist. He worked he was the chairman of the board in the state in Nigeria. And when he tried to come back, his visa got denied for 10 years and all that stuff happened. And I was I couldn't see him for 10 years. My siblings, they actually went to England, right?
Went to England, yeah.
Or yeah, England, and saw him one of them years when I was playing AAU basketball. But for me, when I was thinking about just being self-aware and thinking about why am I the way that I am, right? And why did, like, early ages I would lash out and things like that. And it's because my father wasn't there. And it never was, like, in the vein of, dang, every day I'm saying it, but mm-hmm. it's just the way I'm acting without, like, mm-hmm. voicing, my father wasn't there. Mm-hmm. How was it for you? I kind of know, like, in that time, I feel like I acted out a little bit. Mm-hmm. I gave our mom a little trouble.
That's true.
Punching walls, doing crazy things in the house, mm-hmm. Not following instructions, staying at these two boys' house when she was like, come home, sleep at home. Like, how was it for you? Like, how was that time?
And I've said this before. Absolutely, at least to my friends, I think that you and I are very, I almost see it as like a yin and yang. There's right. We complement each other. We're two sides of a coin, because I was like being the technically oldest son, you know, the heir apparent, as it is in Nigerian families. It was like I was the dad, the replacement dad.
Yeah.
So I was the one that had to be responsible. I was the one that had to do everything by
I was the wild boy.
Yeah.
Wild
so it's just boy. Like I had to do rigidity. I had to be the guy. I had to be responsible. Make sure I was here at this time. Make sure I was doing everything I needed to do. Make sure I was doing my homework. Make sure I was doing projects. Make sure I was succeeding in school.
Yeah.
So it was just like I had to straight line, straight, you know, everything had to be straight and correct.
How was that on your mind and your mental, though? Like, you knew you had to, but, like, did you want to? Like, I knew I was just going to be Norris. Like, I was always a curious, do my thing. Like, did you want to like, fill those shoes?
I think that it, for in some ways, I took pride in it. I was like, you know, excited to do that because it was like, oh, I get to be an adult. This is what it's like to be mature, things like that. But in all other ways that I know that it was not good for me.
Yeah.
It was not something.
Unpack that though. Like what kind of ways?
It made me have a lot of anxiety that I'm still dealing with to this day.
Really?
Because it's just like I had to be rigid and like basically an adult my entire childhood. And so I had to make sure that other people knew that I was mature and like an adult.
Yeah.
So now I go in and I'm like, how do these people perceive me?
Mm.
I'm obsessed with how people perceive how I'm acting. If they think that I'm a good person, I'm a good man, I'm responsible, I'm reliable. When it really doesn't matter what they think.
Yeah.
But that's just like one of the first things that I go to is like, I got to make sure that they think that I am like responsible.
Yeah.
I am a full grown mature adult.
And I feel like a lot of people, if they're listening, they go through that as well. They're the man of their house, their father, their mother wasn't in the house and they had to take on a big role.
Mm-hmm.
And so every room that they're walking into, they try to portray this thing like people are looking at them a certain way and people aren't looking at them a certain way. It's like their mind believe like telling them like, nah, you gotta be this.
Right.
If you walk in this room with all these little people in these little fancy suits, you better show them that you are somebody.
Right.
And I feel like a lot of people say little man syndrome too. Like mm-hmm. if you're a smaller kid picked on all your life, mm-hmm. you kind of have to show that. So I guess you're saying like, is it just socially for you when you walk into rooms, that really hinders you? Or is it personally, like when you wake up and you have step one, step two, all them little steps of Spanish that you got, are you looking for, like, is that, are you obviously gaining, like, becoming more anxious thinking about it? Or are you more so the social aspect of having anxiety?
I think it's a little bit of both, but more so, much more so, the social aspect. And I think, and the reason is this, and that's the thing, whenever some people have stuff like that, you'll see that they a lot of times are highly successful.
Right.
Like they set expectations, high expectations for themselves. And they're, whenever they reach those expectations, it's not with celebration and joy.
Yeah.
It's with relief.
Yeah.
It is not just, oh, yes, I did it. Congrats. It's like, whew, okay.
Yeah.
Hopefully I do it again tomorrow.
Right.
Like that is what anxiety is. And it's just like you are setting it so high for yourself.
Yeah.
And then if you had an average day, that's not good enough.
That is so crazy you say that, because if even me listening to you say that, it's like, man, that's how I am with basketball. Or and I know a lot of athletes, they're preparing all season, all preseason. Oh, I got to be this. I got to be this. Okay, you made the step to start. Let me backtrack, because the guy that told me that I would never, but he told me freshman year when I was going to Texas Tech, you're not going to start at Tech, is right here, Tevin Orr, but he swears he never said that. He told me that I was not going to start my first game. I never forgot that. Never. But it kind of drove me in a different way. But I'm saying, whenever you have something that you're preparing for, so say preseason, before the season, and in season, if you're reaching goals like, I got to hit my average this game, 10 points a game. All right, you reach your average. You're like, but it's never like, yeah, I did, like, I did it. I did it. It's just like, all right, next game. If you don't validate that, you're feeling terrible, terrible. And for me, in basketball and in sports, especially when you have like statistics to say like, hey, you ain't shit today.
Yeah.
You really feel like you're not shit.
Yeah.
So it's really tough to battle that. And I connect with you in that way. Tevin's looking at me like, why he say that? Bro, it's not that deep. You said that. He literally said that. Like, you don't forget those things in life. You do not forget those things in life. But no, like, to connect back to you, it's, That's a rough kind of vein to deal with. So more socially for you, you said.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think it's just like I became obsessed with my perception, especially when it comes to being responsible and being the good guy and being like, you know, the good person that everybody approves of his actions, the protagonist in every story.
But for me, doesn't that? Okay, so you're worrying about. Not worrying about what people think about you, but that, I feel like that kind of puts you in a box when they say, all right, he's the typical med school guy. He's the typical doctor. It's kind of a label. And I feel like a lot of people do this time after time, say, I play good. I reach those heights and I say, hey, I want to be this macho basketball player. And then they're like, all right, great. You're a basketball player. You're a doctor. And then what? And I feel like with us, even with being a twin, we deal with those labels since I was always, hey, that boy fine. I don't know about it. Nah. But I was the athlete. I was the talkative one. I was the extrovert, that type of guy. You were always the smart one, like that type of. How did that labeling from young and even to now kind of, did that steer in the vein of, I think that kind of aids your mindset to social anxiety. For me, it's just like thinking out loud. It's like that label, or that labeling from a kid, it's kind of steering your mindset to want that validation of another label, if that makes sense.
I think that that has something to do with it,
right,
for sure. I think that I was able to get used to labels. I was able to get used to being part of that from childhood, because I was like, oh, I'm a twin. Oh, you know, haha, we're Zach and Cody. There's one that's the cool one. There's one that's the smart one. It was just always something that I was like, okay, I'm fulfilling the role correctly. And it's like, oh, okay, great. I'm used to filling this role correctly. But now when it comes to, like, you know, social anxiety with, oh, I want to be seen as the good guy. Am I filling that correctly? So I am basically formulating ambiguous roles. I'm formulating ambiguous roles for, like, what it means to be the good guy in each individual person's mind. So I'm orchestrating. I'm illustrating like what it is that makes them a good
person.
But do
you feel like the good guy yourself?
Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing. I'm like, as long as everybody thinks that I am, then I am. But it's just like, as opposed to me thinking that I'm good, I'm like, I am good because everybody else thinks I'm good.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm fine with who I am. That's whatever.
Right.
But when it comes to meeting new people or things like, and that's the thing, it only becomes a thing when it's just like a new person.
And rewind, because I feel like this plays a big part in it. And it kind of made me not sad, but like, damn, the cool guy, the cool kid, the cool twin. Why did you? Okay, obviously I was a popular kid, right? But like, how was that for you? You didn't see yourself as that. We had different friend groups, different things that we were into.
Right.
How was that on your end? Like, what did you, like, how was that for you?
I mean, it was fine. I mean, I think especially because we went to a school district that was like, we need to separate them. So we were always in different classes. I was like, yeah, sure. We're going to have different friends.
Right.
But I think it just came down to, hey, I didn't like sports. I've had this conversation actually multiple times since like in the past 2 weeks or so.
Yeah.
It was just like, I just never liked sports. So I wasn't going to be the athlete.
Yeah.
I didn't like it. But by the time I did start to enjoy sports, it was like junior year of high school.
Mm.
And it was just like, well, I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah, and for me, selfishly, I'm like, dang, we could have been them ones in the city. Like, I always, like, in my head, I'm like, damn, I wish Nick played basketball. That would have been awesome. And
I've heard that a lot.
Yeah.
I've heard that a lot.
And even to the point of, I feel like when you're growing and you're in high school, especially, you're extremely impressionable. So what your friends do, you do. What you got you going on, you like, that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
And so it's like, since we're so separate in that time, I feel like that kind of built a wedge, almost a wedge that I think I aided, to be honest. I remember there was a time that we're closer now, right? There was a time, I think in like the second grade area, we left Temple Christian. We used to go to a private school.
Right.
You know, button up kids from private school, you know, living different. But we went to a private school before the public sector. So once we got to public school, there was different characters at public school.
Absolutely.
Kids that just were lawless, did things. And I was just like, oh, my God.
Right.
And me being curious, I would kind of side to the, oh, my God, crowd. And you were like the, nah, I'm going to do my thing. And it's, I remember a point where, and it's disappointing and it's so frustrating to even think about, but there was a point where I would go to school and I was hanging out with a crowd that kind of made fun of you or like picked on how you were. And even me hearing that, it's just, it's mind-boggling how you could have a twin brother, like a twin, like I'm crossing my fingers, people don't know, like a twin, like, you know how people say, I see you, I love you, twin, like a twin brother.
Right.
And be taken out of your spot or taken out of who you are mentally because you're hanging out with different crowds. And now you're kind of talking about your twin brother. Like, obviously, I think I've apologized for this. Again, I apologize again. But how did that make you feel? Like, hey, we go to this other school. My twin, this boy done switched up on me. Like, how did that make you feel? Like, how was that for you?
I don't. Maybe this is just like deep in my subconscious. But
dive into it. Where is
no,
it? Where
I just I don't really I never really thought about it like that. I just maybe I don't remember, or it was just like, it wasn't something that was a significant part of my time. Like, it wasn't something that I thought about.
He didn't care about me, bro.
It was just like, you know, I like, if they talked about me, it wasn't to my face.
Right.
Or something. I just don't remember.
But you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know what you're talking about. But it was just never, like, I'm really racking my brain. I'm like, I mean, I knew you hung out with Tevin. I was like, okay, Tevin's cool. And then, like,
but for me, it's more than that. And they're in the room. It's like, it was like we're almost two different people. They're like, they know Norris. They with Norris all the time, but we barely see Nick. Like, and it's like, even to a point where just a couple hours ago, Nick comes into the room. It's a different. Obviously, he's Nick. We're cool now. But like, why isn't it just like regular? You know why? Like, I feel like that wedge was from those times where, like, subconsciously you say it didn't affect you, but it's like, I feel like those times when we were younger kind of still builds up. And for me, I would say I apologize. One, and two, it's just, it's crazy because people don't ever know, like, every decision that they make whether the person that they're doing it to, whether they say it or voice it, it affects them.
Absolutely. Like
it affects them and affects the relationship.
Right.
So I just wonder, if I didn't do that, would you be hooping? Would we, like, you know?
I mean, honestly, I'm not going to lie to you. It's possible.
Yeah. Really?
And I think it's not... I think it was part of it was, oh, like the wedge or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it was just like, actually, there was one time that I was like, oh, okay, so we're going in different directions.
Yeah.
And that wasn't like, oh, I'm sad. It was just like, oh, this is what we're doing.
Right.
Was when we went into middle school and I went to band and you went to a different class. Because
yeah.
I was like, oh, we're both going to band. Fine, whatever, great. And then by the time I got in band, I was like, oh, he's not here.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess it's just me then.
Yeah.
That's when it kind of solidified for me. And that's what was funny, because it was just like, Sweet Life is Zach and Cody, the twins, you know, one's cool. Like, one is like, you know, the partier kind of, one is smart and got it together.
Right. I do think, again, that those times when we were young led up to now. And mm-hmm. there was a specific time, actually. If people don't know my story, I went to a prep school my last year of high school, and he went on to Tech. We're twins. That boy's smart. He go to college. I go to hoop some more and try to make it into college.
Mm-hmm.
We end up, my mom says, hey, I want you guys to be in the same school. I picked Texas Tech. It's a storybook. But honestly, it's not a storybook, because when I went to the school, my mom wanted us to be together at the school. We barely saw each other at the school.
That is very true.
So it's like our whole... elementary, middle school, high school, we're in two different lanes.
Mm-hmm.
We finally have another chance to be in the same lane.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we read Raiders, but are we still in the same lane? And it wasn't. Mm-hmm. It wasn't. And it all came to a halt for me. It was like one day I got a call, and I think it was from my mom, and she said, Nick got held up at gunpoint. Yeah. Nick got held up at gunpoint. And I remember I was in my room, I think, at my girl at the time, whatever. And I just dropped everything. I called you. I came to you. And it was just like a moment where, for me, selfishly, where I was like, how could I, like,
mm-hmm.
I've been with this kid at my twin, my blood, four mm-hmm. minutes older than me at this school for how long? And God forbid, if he would have gone like that, I didn't even spend real time with, like,
mm-hmm.
and it really made me think, like, how much time are we taking advantage with our loved ones or just because of a career or just what we like to do or different motives that we're, how many times are we like taking advantage of
mm-hmm.
when that thing could have gone like that? And I came to you, he was like, yeah, it's fine. He took my phone or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And in my head, I was like, man, hell no. I was like stressing in my mind.
Yeah.
I was just like, I remember I went to eat what you gave money or
yeah.
something. But it's just like, bro, it was so tough for me at that moment. It was like it actually happened almost
mm-hmm.
because I saw like my, like God was like, nigga, God, God was like, get in line, mm-hmm. like get in line.
Mm-hmm.
How was that for you? How did that experience? Can you talk about that a little bit?
I think it's very interesting because I don't know why. And I think I've learned through my, like, looking into myself and things like that, I have certain aversions for, like, negative emotion. So it's just, like, I don't feel them as much. Like, so,
say what happened, though. Tell
okay,
them
so
happened.
Basically, I was leaving the party, and I was on my phone. I was an RA at the time, so I had to do, like, rounds. Every once in a while, you have to do rounds on the entire building. So it was my turn to do rounds, so I was leaving the party early. And I was walking with my phone. I was just like texting somebody. And it was very dark. I should have been paying attention, but it was very dark. All I could see was like, I was blinded by my own light in my cell phone. All of a sudden I see two guys and they were like, hey, do you have change for 100? And I was like, what? No, I do not. And he was like, well, okay. Do you have change for 20? And I was like, I have like $2 in my wallet. And then he was like, okay, well, and he pulled out his gun and pointed at my stomach. And he was like, well, give me that. And I was like, oh, okay, well, this is real. Okay, wow. I was like, okay. So, like, you know, I was really shaky and stuff like that. He was like, give me your watch. Give me your phone. He was like, do you have any money on your card? And I was like, I do, but I'm going to tell him no. So I said no. And he left it alone. And So I gave him like, I had like $12 in my wallet. I gave him my watch. I gave him my phone. I could not figure out how to turn off the passcode because my fingers were just like shaking. So I just told him the code. And then they were walking me to my car. They kept walking me. Like I was parked a ways away.
Right.
And somebody asked me, do you have any kids? And I was like, yes, I do. I have two kids.
Yeah.
A boy and a girl. And
wait, one of the guys actually.
Yeah, because okay. I was like, I'm getting the sympathy. Let me get out of
this. Yeah.
And he was like, well, if you want to see them again, you will do what we tell you. And I was like, that did not work. That did not work
at all.
And eventually, like, it was like, we were kind of walking slowly, I guess. So I guess they were impatient. And then they're like, come on, man, this guy doesn't have anything. And then the other guy with the gun, he was like, you sure? And he was like, yeah, we should go. And then they're like, okay. And then the guy that told him that was like, you're lucky, N-word. I just saved your life. So thank me or something like that. And I said, okay, thanks. And then like a car drove up really slowly and they got in that car and they were driving. They drove towards the party. Right. So my instinct, like, I don't know what, that's the thing. I don't know why I was reacting so calmly, but the next thing I was like, I have to get to a phone to notify the people at the party because they're driving towards the party.
Oh, okay.
So I need to run. Okay. I was running. I was knocking on doors. It was late at night in Lubbock. They were just like, nobody was answering my door. So I quickly drove. I drove back home. I was like, I need to call somebody. The first thing I was like, I need to call somebody. I just been robbed. I need to call somebody. And so I eventually got somebody's phone number at the party and was like, make sure you guys watch out because I just got robbed.
I know we shouldn't glorify suffering, but you see what they saying about that Lubbock, Texas, bro. It get gritty.
Yeah.
I'm talking to two people that not from Lubbock. They like, oh, what? It get gritty out there in the LBK. But no, it's speaking of the LBK and what I kind of know the party that you were at, your frat party, right?
Yeah.
The Beta Upsilon Chi, right?
Oh, Upsilon Chi.
How you say
it? Beta Upsilon Chi.
What is the difference between what I said and what he said? Will you shut up?
You said Upsilon Chi.
Beta, what the hell is that? Beta Chi.
Upsilon Chi.
What is that? What does Beta Upsilon Chi mean to Nick Owen Odiasse? What does that mean to you?
It's a Greek acronym meaning brothers.
No, like the brotherhood, dude. I don't care. I said, what does that mean to you? What does the brotherhood mean? I know what the TTU Red Raider MB like men basketball team. That's family. That's heart. That's strong. Like, you know, we together. We locked in. What does your squad mean to you? He's talking about acronyms, nigga. I mean, boy, what does it mean for you?
Okay. I think it just meant like it just community of people pushing each other towards Christ and pushing each other towards being better people, being better followers of Christ. Mm-hmm. So it was just like a reminder, a continuous reminder of going through college of being a man of God.
So when people think about frats though, they think about little parties, you know, they bring people. What did y'all have? Like, what was y'all sing?
We had a lot of music and a lot of dancing and,
man, hell no,
soda and snacks.
Y'all done had the ladies, the fellas together, you know.
I mean,
dirty wine. Even,
no, doing it. Absolutely not. And I mean, would I now go to those kinds of things? Yes. But would I go to other things?
What's up, little Nick?
Also, yes.
Yeah, sir. Kind of, wait. I would like to selfishly, right? This is my twin brother, right? And again, we talked about we took different paths.
Mm-hmm.
This guy gets to med school. He texts me. He said, Norris, I should have been doing this my whole life.
Oh,
I should have been with you. Because he says, he explains me to be the party. I had a good college life. Oh, I lived it up, man. Like a college man. I did my thing. And Nick, honestly, Nick never did that. He was just books. Christ, obviously, I love God. I love God. I'm a child of God. But God made that little jigga juice, too.
Why?
And that, nah. And God made that little jigga juice, too, and I was off that jigga juice. And Nick was like, when he got to med school, he said, Lawrence, I should have been doing this with you. When was your, I guess, coming out moment to life?
I think the biggest thing for me, actually, in all seriousness, was because I saw people live that life and get into medical school their first year.
And you're like, oh, they can do it, boy.
Yeah, yeah. That's when I was like, oh, you know, I'm living straight edge life. I'm doing everything I need to do, but I'm still it still takes me 3 years to get into medical school. Meanwhile, people are enjoying their life in college, and then they immediately get in.
Yeah.
That means that that doesn't really matter as much.
And that ties back to that over being sufferhead, like go, go, go. Right. It kind of is like a release. Like,
right.
Again, with releases, I feel like this is my creative release and, you know, part of that my release too. Do you have a creative vice, a release that kind of clears your head? But because for me, when people are so grind, you need a release, like family, friends, mm-hmm. but you also need like a creative release, a vein where it's just like, let your thoughts be on paper. Let your thoughts be on a pod or a song or mm-hmm. that type of thing. Besides from your job, like, so how do you disconnect yourself from the med school guy and the part of your guy now? What is your creative vein?
I think, and this is something I'm still trying to work on, honestly, is just being able to like write it all down more, just mm-hmm. like literally how I'm feeling. Cause I know one, when I look back on it, I'll be able to see like how not that serious the things I was dealing with were, as like when I look back on it. So like writing it down, it just feels like there's just a weight off my mind.
Right.
So I'm trying to become more consistent with that. Yeah. I'm trying to.
Do you feel like you have better days when you do write things down and you journal?
I think it just feels good. And I don't know how it affects my entire rest of my day.
Yeah.
But it does stop. It's a more meditative thing.
Right.
Like I am truly present, as opposed to this is what I need to be doing. This is what I should have been doing since.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I need to be working towards. Yeah. I need to be able to get this amount of content done in this amount of days,
right,
so I can review and I can get ready for this test, so I can get ready for the next one. It's just like, this is what I'm doing right now.
Right.
There's nothing else here. I can just relax and breathe and be a human in this amount of time.
Basically, okay, translation. What this guy said is he doesn't have a creative vein. He journals sometimes. But me thinking that I'm his twin and I'm looking at him, I think your creative vein is the gym. Because growing up, he wasn't in the gym lifting with me. He wasn't ever on that stuff. But now that we're growing up, like at this age, where I'm like, this dude is more like me now. Like he's more. And I think your creative vein is going to the gym. Talk about your consistency with your lifting weights now. Like how have you seen that spark in your life in different ways? Like has the gym, if you haven't seen him, this guy's jacked. He's more jacked than me. Yeah. But like, how has that manifested not only in a physical way, but in your mind? Like how have you seen the benefits in that?
I think one of the biggest things that I learned through going to the gym was I am not doing this for anybody else. I'm not doing this to perform.
Right.
Like I think one thing that I've realized through the gym, but it can apply to life, is like, stop looking at yourself, like stop trying to get to the finish line in a single step.
Right.
It takes one small step a bunch of times to the point that you're consistent, to the point that you're just, this is just a part of who you are now.
Right.
And then all of a sudden people will start saying, hey, I need gym advice. And I'm like, I don't know. Like I'm just doing, this is just something I do.
Yeah.
This is not something, I'm not like a trainer. This is just kind of something I do.
Yeah.
So basically how I got started was after my freshman year of college. Everybody says the freshman 15. I think I packed on like 30 pounds.
Yeah.
And being around African people, one of my friend's mom, she's from the Democratic Republic of the Congo. She was like, you got fat. Like when I got home.
Yeah.
And obviously my parents did not let up either. They're like, you got fat. And I was like, oh no, I got fat.
Yeah.
So summer after, I think it was summer of 2014, I was like, I should start going to the gym. And yeah. I was like, and that took another level of anxiety. And I was like, I hate this. I look terrible. I look so weak in front of all these people.
Yeah.
But then it just came to the point, it was just like, I do not look at them. I'm just here to improve myself.
Yeah. And what I hear from that story is like, you heard someone say something that kind of resonated with you,
mm-hmm.
and you looked at yourself and it kind of took you. And I wouldn't say would you say depression or kind of a lower state?
It took me to a place of contemplation.
Like, right.
I'm not doing what I wanted to. I'm not. Right. I'm not the person that I wanted to be.
Yeah, and I guess what I'm trying to say is, with those little small steps and that going into the gym, it's like progression is the enemy of that depression. Like once you see yourself progressing in an area, that mindset or that down on yourself, it kind of breaks. There's no continuity between the two because you see yourself becoming somebody different and running away from what you were. Right. So it's like that progress in the day to day. And now you can see it physically. I feel like for a lot of people that are dealing with depression or a down state, it's just like seeing the small wins. Mm-hmm. It's like the day to day, it's setting themselves up with small habits, like going to the gym, mm-hmm. or journaling, or things that sparks a different reality in their mind. Like, hey, I can be a different person, mm-hmm. in the gym. Hey, I look like a different person. Like that's me running away from who I was. And I think that something as small as going to the gym is a great kind of a starting point for a lot of people who are dealing with that. So that's interesting that he's finally a meathead, a juicehead, Nick. Speaking of meathead, it's a weird transition. I would remember, obviously, right? Your twins growing up, you probably got into little fights, whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't think we really fought a lot. What do you think?
We fought a lot.
Oh, I guess I'm a liar. Okay, wait. We fought a lot, right? Mm-hmm. The only thing I can think of is there's this time, right? Nick and I had a fight. This guy, he pissed me off. I slapped him like he had closed fists. I remember I told Tevin, it was like so astonishing to me that my own twin brother threw a closed fist at me. I was like, how could he? Like, how dare he? Like, that's an unwritten rule when you're a twin or a brother or a sibling. You don't punch your brother. This dude threw a closed fist. Why'd you throw the closed fist?
I will just like to say that I also have a story of you doing that to me.
A closed fist?
Yes.
Stop it.
To the jaw.
Stop mm-hmm. it. And boy had them hands, dog. To the jaw. You hear him.
No, it was, the thing is whenever you say fight, and keep in mind, there's a large size difference. It was exaggerated when we were children.
No, it wasn't. We were close in size. You just had a bigger head. When? A bobblehead.
When?
Before, bro, fifth grade, Tevin.
I'm talking about after fifth grade.
So we were always just a disparity in size?
I'm just saying, whenever you were big, you used to get on top of me, and then there have been times that you were got on top of me, and you were just at the jaw like this.
These guys are immature. You already know why. I won't voice it, but I was not ever punching this guy in the face.
I don't agree.
But again, I think it's just the competitiveness that kind of manifested in that way of anger and fighting sometimes. But mm-hmm. it's like, we're so different. Like you said, we're yin and yang, but we're so similar as you said, like mm-hmm. I'm very prideful. I'm very to my work, to what I want to do. But like, I'm telling my friends here, I'm like, I think this guy, Nick, is even people that know me, right? They think, oh, he's a worker. He's a grinder. And I am. But I think Nick Owen Odiasse, big brother, I think he is even more so than that, because everything that we've talked about, to the point where my dumb ass early on was picking on my brother, he's doing all these things. I feel like it could have been so easy for him to be like, all right, let me just do what Norris is doing. It's easier. But he unapologetically would stay on his own, do his thing, do what he wanted to do. He wanted to be a med school student. He wanted to be a doctor. He's doing this regardless of what y'all are doing. Y'all do your little thing. Go run around, do all that. I'm going to do this. I feel like that takes a different ilk of knowing, like a deeper knowing. And I think, like we said earlier, it comes from our dad. It's just like, how do you do that? And literally, looking outside, no one is doing that. Like for me, I had friends that's doing what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Like who was your Tevin and Jordan? Like who was that for you growing up? I've been with these guys fifth grade, Tevin. Mm-hmm. I'm not a follower, but he had a little cell phone. I wanted that cell phone. I asked mom, I got the cell phone. Mm-hmm. Like who was your cell phone buddy early on? Like how was that without, you know, that kind of.
I think it's very interesting because most of what you just said, it's just like, I don't really agree with.
Really?
Yeah. I don't really see myself as like a grinder. Like that's not just, I just was like, this is what I'm going to do. And I, part of me understands where you're coming from, because right. I was, even with the four of us, mm-hmm. Bosun Edson and you and I, they would all, even when it came down to like random things like desserts, it was like, you guys would all have the same dessert and I would choose a different one because I was like, I don't want that one. And it's just like, I just would do something different because it's just like, I don't know.
This is
just
even from small things, like before we started this episode, he like shared snacks with all of us. Nick, if my sisters, Bosun Edson, can attest to this, Nick would never share his things ever. The boy would buy, he would buy a little small little refrigerator, put it in his room and everything, bring snacks, everything. Like, can I have a piece of gum? The boy, he's the type of person who literally like rip off a little piece and give it to you. And I'm like, dang, can I get the other one? He'd be like, and even as something as small as that, it's not like being selfish. I think it's like a deeper, like, bro, I know what I like and I know what's mine and I know what's my goal, what I'm focused after. You don't see it that way, but I don't know. I think that's just like a deeper knowing in yourself, I feel like.
I see where you're coming from. In my opinion, I think that, and I've actually been talking with my friends about that for some time.
Right.
Because I think growing up in a household with three other siblings, one being bigger than me that eats more than me at that time. Because in high school, yeah, I'm muscular now, great. In high school, I was like skin and bones.
Yeah.
I was very thin. So yeah. It was just like I didn't eat nearly as much. So I knew when it came down to food. And that's what I've learned. When it comes to that, I'm kind of stingy with my food specifically because it was just like something that I had control over or I could just. I think that's what I've come to realize, and that's what I've been trying to actively unravel now, because it was just like I had less control over it. And that's something like I realize now, it's like something that you share to be in camaraderie, community with other people.
I say what the hell in jokes, but I definitely understand what you mean. It's just like a control, and I think that manifests in a lot of ways and a lot of negative ways.
Absolutely.
Like I said, for me, even relationships, right? Mm. I would be a controller, but not in that way, in a loving kind of giver type of way, but mm-hmm. I'd be controlling like, oh, I know where she's at. I can give her, like, I think I can like change her mindset by what I do, mm-hmm. not letting her actually feel how she wants to feel.
Mm-hmm.
How, now that you in the city, relationships, how have they been for the boy? I honestly want to know because Norris never is in the know about relationships. How was relationships with Nick?
They're okay. I mean,
why are you laughing, Tevin? he said, if y'all couldn't hear him, he said, I'm trying to get him caught up. Nah, like how they doing? You big man on campus now.
they're fine. I just say right
now. You can say plead the fifth, bro. You don't have to, you know.
No, it's fine. Right now, at least, and I'm really trying to look into it. I literally had a conversation about it today.
With your girl?
No, I don't have a girl right now.
Right now. What did that mean? Bro, Mind Bully Podcast, they know about me. They know, you know, my situation. I'm in love type, you know, with
whatever. I do not have anyone right now. I was talking to somebody previously.
Yeah, what happened?
And we thought that it would be best to be friends.
Who thought though? We thought like
we.
Whenever somebody says okay, mutual, it was never mutual.
More so me. Okay,
so you laid it like I got to focus. I'm locked in.
Is this kind of like yeah, sure. But yeah, no, honestly, that's something that I'm dealing with now. Is like, and that's the biggest thing with medical school is like trying to figure out when to have a life.
Right.
Like you can't just wait. You can't wait another 4 years to develop yourself
mm-hmm.
outside of medical school.
Yeah.
And that includes relationships. And that's something that I'm still having trouble to deal with is like, when do I invest that time into formulating a relationship? Because I do want to, you know, I want to have a family, want to have a wife, want to have kids and all that stuff. I'm just like, oh, it's just so hard to do right now.
It's like your conscience knows like, hey, I got to mark this in my head. Like I have to become this person to be in a relationship. But even with me, it's like a lot of us, we kind of like want to mark down, hey, I got to be in this relationship. I got to be this type of guy. Check. But it's like what you're going after is so much greater, like towards your, you know, who you want to be. So how do you kind of draw the lines and have that balance of becoming that? Like, do you like strategically place days where, hey, I'm going to go out with friends and like, you know, if whatever happens, happens? Or because a lot of times you grind, you're working, you're studying. When do you give yourself that time to actually build that type of person that you want to be? Weekends or do you strategically? Yeah.
It's mainly weekends. And are we talking about, and that's the thing, that depends on if you're talking about romantic or just personal, just general. Because I will say, I live in Galveston, Texas.
Yeah.
That is basically a small town that has a beach.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of options.
I guess I'm more so saying, like, how do you put yourself in those situations? Like, do you strategically say, hey, I've been studying for like hours now. I gotta see a little something. Like, do you strategically do that, or just whenever it happens?
No, it's usually weekends. Okay. I literally, and then that's the thing. I'm relatively disorganized. Mm-hmm. So my first year I would just study until I went to sleep. And then I wake up and I'd study until I went to sleep. And then I wake up and I'd study until I went to sleep. And it was just like, I didn't have to, but it was just like, I would procrastinate. I would get on my phone, different things like that. But I would never reach that goal until eventually it was 11 p.m. And I'm like, well, I have to finish this because I've wasted enough time. I must finish what I planned on doing before I go to bed. And then I go to bed at like 2 or 3 in the morning.
Yeah. What I'm hearing and what I've heard this whole episode is a guy, whether he knows it or not, is extremely locked in, extremely like focused towards what he wants to do. Even from childhood, he has like a deeper knowing of, this is what I want to do. This is how I'm going to do it. It doesn't matter the hardships that I go through on that journey to get to that place, but that's just how I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it my way. And it's like, that's leadership. And it's obviously something I connect with, and people listening can connect with this. Like, when you're a leader, it's like, it gets lonely.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lonely time where it's like, you know, but now it's on you to, like, I guess, serve others in a way that they're like, oh, he's different. He's a leader. Like, they feel that, you know, like you're certain in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that is a, we're twins, but that definitely ties us together. I mean, even something from as small as being in the dorms, what were you were.
I was what they call the community advisor.
He was the snitch. He was the snitch in the dorms. When everybody, if somebody had a little weed, had a little drink, he like, oh, hell no, get that out of there.
I know. Literally, when I was an RA, I'd be like, I didn't see that. I'm blind. I did not see that. Literally, pets, obviously not in the dorms. I'd see people walking their dogs into the room. I'm like, whatever you have in there, I'm closing my eyes right now. Whatever you have with you, put it in your room because I didn't see it. Just leave it alone.
But Do you think that being an RA kind of helped your vein of leadership? Like, did it have like fine tool, like who, like, you know, your non-negotiables, and did it help you with service to other people?
Specifically with an RA, I think it helped with management. Okay. I learned how to manage.
Right.
Because if people who went to tech, I was an RA for Chitwood Weymouth, which is like an all freshman.
Chitwood, they know what they call that. Look, Chitwood,
all freshman dorm. So I was in charge of 56 freshmen when I was a sophomore.
Yikes!
So it was just like a lot. So I just quickly learned how to manage which people are more active than others, what they're doing, which people go out and have a little too much to drink,
right?
Different things like that. So you just kind of learned how to manage that and how to interact with that.
Yeah.
So you, I learned how to interact with a lot of different people on how they are able to, as opposed to like how I do it. Cause you can't just do it how you're going to do it. Not everybody's going to react well to that.
Yeah. That's crazy. I couldn't even imagine being in charge of that many freshmen when I was a sophomore. Like, on your times, obviously, you were so focused and you didn't go out. I would think, for me, I'm like, hey, I'm trying to go out. They got the little drink in their room. Let me sip with them. And it's kind of like, dang, like unapologetically a leader. Another question I had that I just thought about is, obviously we went to the same school. I played basketball. I'm not a hot shot, but like, I'm sure you got the vein of, hey, that's Norris's brother. Hey, that's Norris's brother. How did that again, I know what your answer is going to be, but for people listening, how did, I know there's people that have like high profile siblings or people that they're with. How did you like stay true to being an individual when you hear, hey, that's Norris, brother. Hey, that, you're like, no, I'm Nick. How did that like?
I think honestly, I really enjoyed it. I was very proud of it. Like I had to stop myself, and I still have to stop myself from talking about you on a regular basis.
That's
because
love.
Like
that's love.
It's just like something like I'm proud of it, very proud.
Yeah.
But it was just like when I knew there were certain people that were only talking to me because I was your brother.
Really?
Oh yeah, and that's when you, like you learn, and that's the thing. That's why I was like, I know people that are, you know, siblings or they're related to in some form or fashion somebody that is notable.
Yeah.
So they can tell the difference.
Yeah.
And it's very thinly veiled. Like you can tell when this person knows you and they want to get to know you and talk about your brother and do that stuff, and that's fine. I enjoy talking about my brother. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's only, hey, like, introducing me to other people, being this is Norris's brother.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, I'm like, do you know me? Like that's, you can talk to me about him, but once you start introducing me to not Nick, but this is Norris's brother, Nick.
Yeah.
His brother plays on the basketball team. Those are the words that would first come out of their mouth.
That's annoying.
I'm like,
that's annoying.
Okay,
and it's like, it takes somebody that's genuine in their heart, and there's not a lot of siblings that would do that. That's like, oh, I really love that.
Mm.
And for me, outside looking in, I was just like, bro, like I'm Norris. I'm not Nick. Like, and I actually feel the same way because after a while, obviously your leadership, we can talk about that more in a second. How, you know, they got an award after this boy, but I started hearing, hey, you Nick's brother. And I kind of like, yeah, I am. Like, thank you. Actually, my best friend, Andrew Soros, his wife, Kelsey, she was like,
Oh, I know Nick.
And I'm like, I kind of got the different version. I actually can attest to that. Like, I felt the same way. Like, yeah. But a lot of people won't feel that. Yeah. Like, so it's more so upbringing. And I feel like we're blessed to have parents that kind of instilled that, like, culture, that togetherness, that family, and that, you know, love.
Mm-hmm.
But kind of to revert to that, what does the Nick Odiase Award, what does that mean? And what does that mean to you that they got an award at the frat at TTU named after Nick to this day? What does that mean?
So the Nick Odiase Luke 815 Award.
Wait, Tessie, what's Luke 815?
It is basically, and then he sowed the seeds on good soil and it reaped a harvest.
Dang. Yeah. I ain't know that one, but I'm going to tap in. But,
it's like an honor to have that. And I didn't think that it would last as long. I'm not going to lie to you.
Really?
I was just like, okay, I mean, eventually, but it's a really cool thing to say, but it was just like, It's awarded to the best senior. So, like, you know, not, you usually don't have like an officer position or something by the time you're leaving. So a lot of times your investment in the fraternity kind of drops off. It's like, I did what I had to do. You know, I did like my, I did whatever.
Hey boy, I don't care about all that. What does it mean to your heart? I don't care about the little, the X's and O's of it. What does it mean to have your frat at your fraternity? The people that are gone now, they still recognize, hey, this should be his award. It should be named after him.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? I don't care about the little X and O's. I don't care about the strategy. What does it mean to have that love?
It makes me very proud.
Right.
Because it's like, and that's the thing. I've realized the biggest thing in my life that I value the most is leaving a legacy.
Mm.
And I'm very proud to have been able to do that.
Yeah.
I'm very proud to be able to say I left something that left an impact on people to the point that they awarded something to me.
Yeah. That's love.
Yeah, it's just, you know, momentous, actually. It's very, like, I'm very honored to have
that's love. That's love. Okay. All right, big man, big dog. I got 5 questions. With these 5 questions, right? Fast 5. I don't want you to mumble on, ramble on like you've been doing. I got the ramble problem too. I want one word to describe each of one of these things. You ready?
Ready.
8529 Tallahassee Lane. What does that mean to you?
Memories.
Memories. That's our family home, first home, you know, in the slumps, the creek. All right, next one, next one. Twin.
Pride.
That's love, that's love. I'm pumping my chest. Yeah, sir. Okay, okay, I like that one. Children.
Legacy.
God.
Love.
Mind Bully Podcast.
Dope.
Okay, I didn't like that one. I didn't hey, I didn't like that one, but he liked that one. Last question. Overcoming your mind bully. What does that look like for Nick?
I've been thinking about this a lot actually. It becomes speaking to it.
Right.
There's like everybody says it all the time, you can't count to 10 and then say start ABCs with like you can interrupt yourself by actively speaking. Right. Actively. So I've come to the point where I have to encourage myself out loud. Mm. When it comes to like, oh, getting this done for the day, it's like, ugh, I'm just relieved. No, be celebrating. Right. Good job, Nick.
Right.
Good job at finishing this.
Yes, sir.
All of a sudden when I do that, you know, I get a little something.
Yeah.
There's a little feeling of like, I'm glad, I'm proud.
Yeah, yeah.
So speaking to your mind bully, speaking to your anxiety, speaking to it, be like, nah. Like arguing with yourself.
Yeah.
Arguing against your anxiety.
Right.
You're able to reason. For me, at least, I'm a very argumentative guy,
yeah.
And I listen to a lot of reason.
Right.
So whenever I reason through my anxiety, I'm like, you're just being anxious. I'm like, oh. Well,
yeah.
I guess I can't be anxious about that anymore.
Yeah. And so. That's awesome because it's for me, it's like puppet and puppet master. It's like until you're conscious of what you actually feel and your feelings,
mm-hmm.
it's like you're working against an unknown force. And that unknown force being the puppet master, it's like you have to work on your insecurities, your ego,
right,
and those things that you get to kind of, you know, change or turn the tide. So,
right. And I think when it comes to that, like you're saying, name what you're feeling.
Right.
Name that. And whenever you name that, you're able to be like, oh, obviously this is a normal human emotion. Don't beat yourself up about
right,
it.
Right. Right.
But I'm nervous right now, or I'm just feeling my ego is bruised.
Yeah.
Or I'm feeling prideful right now.
Yeah.
That's okay to feel. Just know that that is not the right way to feel and correct it. Don't beat yourself up like I shouldn't be feeling this way. It's just like, oh, this is how I'm feeling right now. This is how I want to be feeling now. Yeah. I can change my emotion because I can name it.
Yeah.
As opposed to, oh, I'm just feeling just cause. Like, no, just because you feel it doesn't make it right. You're just, your ego is bruised. So now you're acting out. No, say it. Be like, I'm feeling kind of embarrassed. So I'm feeling kind of prideful right now. Let me adjust.
Let me adjust. Name it. I definitely named it. Well, Etta named it with the Mind Bully Podcast. And I'm so grateful to have you on the first. I know it's the 10th episode, but the first time that I've actually had somebody in the studio, somebody behind this mic with me is my twin brother. I'm touching my chest. It's love. I appreciate you. I love you, obviously, my twin brother.
Love you,
thank
too.
You. Thank you so much for being on here with me. My two guys to the right. One in durag just yay yay, the other one just chilling, giving me all the great content. Jordan Kennard, thank y'all for being here with me. You guys tune in. Thank you so much for listening to another Jennings, special
Thanksgiving turkey
edition of the Mind Bully Podcast. Please, if you haven't listened to the other episodes, please go check that out. Rate, review, love. That means so much to me. From me to you.
And from me to you too.
Episode 10, Mind Bully. God bless. I'm out.